Connie was surfing eBay. Vinny's door was closed. I gave Connie my body receipt. Anything new I should know about? Nope, nothing new. All the bad guys have gone to the shore for the weekend. I'm heading out then. See you tomorrow. I slid behind the wheel and called Morelli. What's happening? I asked.
Murder, mayhem, the usual stuff.
Are you up for dinner with my parents?
Yeah, I'm afraid if I don't fill that seat, you'll bring in the second team.
Very funny. See you there at 6. Ranger followed me into my apartment.
My radar is humming so loud it's giving me a headache. This guy is watching you. I know he's there, and I can't get a fix on him.
He removed his gun and put it on the counter next to his keys.
What do you know about Mary Maisonette?
Almost nothing. New to the area. Didn't show up for the interview in black leather and didn't say she wanted to kill people, so we hired her.
She has cop written all over her.
She said her father was a cop. Connie ran her and she seemed to check out. Ranger punched her into his computer.
Let's see what we get.
20 minutes into the computer search, my phone rang. I answered on speakerphone so Ranger could hear. There was a pause, and then Scrog's voice.
I followed you around today. I saw you make the capture. Not bad, but I could teach you some things, Scrog said.
Like what?
I could teach you to shoot. I know a lot about guns. I could teach you about everything. And I don't like that you look so unprofessional. You don't look like a bounty hunter. If we're going to work together, you have to dress better. You should look like that other bounty hunter who came to the office, the one with the red hair.
Joyce Barnhart?
I don't know, the one in the black leather. She looked great. You need to dress like that from now on if you want to hook up with me.
I glanced at Ranger and caught him almost smiling. Maybe, I said to Scrog.
No, you'll do as I say. We're a team. You have to do as I say.
Okay, I'll dress like that if you will. Is that a deal?
Yeah, okay. It's a deal.
So, what are you doing these days? Have you made any captures lately?
I captured my daughter.
That wasn't a capture. She probably wanted to go with you.
Yeah, but it was tricky. I had to get her on a plane and everything.
I could hear his voice ratchet up a notch. He wanted to brag about his kidnapping success. How did you do that?
You're gonna love this. I drugged her, and then I wrapped her leg in one of those inflatable casts and put her in a wheelchair. Everyone thought she was drugged because she was in all this pain and flying to Jersey for special medical help. Pretty good, huh?
Is she there now?
Yeah.
Can I talk to her?
I don't think that's a good idea. You have to wait until you see her.
When do I get to see her?
I don't know. I have to figure a way to get you here. You're always being followed. Starting to get on my nerves.
I don't believe you. I bet she isn't there. His voice ratcheted up again.
Of course she's here. Where the hell do you think she'd be?
I don't know. I thought maybe she ran away.
Okay. You can talk to her, but make it quick.
There was some fumbling noise, and I heard Scrog prod Julie.
Talk,
he said off stage. Hello, I said. Julie? Are you there?
Who's this?
She asked, whisper soft. It's Stephanie. Are you okay? She took a moment, and I was unable to breathe, waiting for her answer.
Yes,
she said. Her little girl voice wobbled.
Do you know my father?
Yes, I said. We're friends. I work with your father. She absorbed that for a beat.
Well, I hope you come visit before we move on again.
There was a yelp, and the line went dead. I looked over at Ranger. His face was devoid of expression, and his breathing was slow and measured. Ranger was in lockdown mode. I didn't have a lockdown mode. Tears swarmed behind my eyes, and a large, painful, undefined emotion clogged my throat. I blinked the tears away and blew out some air.
Jeez, I said.
Ranger gave me a moment to get myself together.
You have a goal, he finally said, quietly. The goal is to rescue Julie. You have to focus on the goal. If you give yourself up to unproductive emotion, you can't focus on the goal.
Let's think this through. Scrog wouldn't risk taking Julie in the car when he was following you around. So he saw you go into this building, and then he returned to his hiding place. That means he's no more than 20 minutes away. And Julie said they were moving around. That might mean they're in a camper or a motorhome. Can you run stolen property checks? I asked Ranger.
Yes, but the police have faster access.
I called Morelli on his cell. Can you run a stolen property check for me? I want you to see if any campers or motorhomes have been reported stolen in the last 2 weeks. All of New Jersey and eastern Pennsylvania. I hung up, and my phone rang again.
I had to hang up, Scrog said. If you stay on too long, they can trace you.
How do you know all these things? I asked him.
I know everything. I'm the best bounty hunter in the world. Anyway, everybody knows about tracing. They always talk about it on television and in the movies. I called back because I have a plan. The feds are watching you, so you have to act natural. I want you to dress like a bounty hunter so they think you're going to work all the time. And then I'm going to show you how to lose them. I want you to be in your car driving around at midnight tonight. I'll call you on your cell phone.
Can't we do this earlier? I don't stay up that late.
Midnight. It's so the people following you will be tired. Jesus, take a nap or something. What's your cell phone number?
I gave him the number, and he hung up. He's created an odd world for himself, I said to Ranger.
If the stakes weren't so high, I'd probably think some of this was funny.
Ranger returned to the computer.
You need to get some bounty hunter clothes.
I don't know where to go to get bounty hunter clothes. I looked at my watch. And I haven't got a lot of time. I'm supposed to be at my parents' house at 6. Maybe I could wear your clothes.
You're welcome to wear my clothes any time of the day or night, but I don't think that's what Scrog had in mind.
I'll send Ella out shopping. She knows your size. Are you getting anything on Mary?
Not at first look, but I think her history feels constructed. It's too perfect. I'm going to give this to Silvio.
Chapter 19. I made lasagna today, my mother said. Your father wanted Italian. It's in the oven staying warm, and there's extra gravy on the stove. Maybe you can help your grandmother with the bread and salad.
I already got the bread and the salad, Grandma said, and I got some antipasto going. We got salami and olives and anchovies and cheese.
It was 5 minutes before 6 o'clock, and my mother was counting down. Grated cheese, butter, olive oil. I pulled the butter and cheese out of the refrigerator and got the olive oil out of the cabinet. I set them all on the table. The red wine was already uncorked, a bottle at each end. The front door opened, and Morelli and Bob walked in, and bang, we were off and running for the dining room. My father was first to sit. My grandmother skidded in right behind him.
We don't want dinner to run over, my grandmother said. Sally's coming here at 7, and we're going to rehearse.
My father was concentrating on the dish of lasagna, tuning my grandmother out. He mumbled something, and we all leaned forward to hear.
Say again, I said to him.
Gravy.
My mother sent the red sauce down to him, and he poured it over everything and dug in, never raising his head. At first glance, the best you might say for my parents' marriage is that my mother never stabbed my father in the ass with a carving knife. If you look closer, you see they found a lifestyle designed for the long haul. My father makes a huge effort to ignore my grandmother. My mother has a few rituals that make my father feel like he counts, and there's an underlying affection that's expressed mostly through tolerance. Morelli filled his plate and passed on the wine. Working tonight? I asked him.
I don't think these are days when I'd want to risk impaired judgment.
I admired his work ethic, but I had no intention of following it. I really needed a glass of wine. Did you find any stolen property? I asked him. He pulled a file card out of his shirt pocket.
I got 2 hits. I have the details here for you, and the license numbers. You might not want to put too much stock in the license. If you have a smart thief, he'll swap out the plate. Should we be working harder to find these vehicles?
Yes, but you should be careful when approaching. I'll explain it all later. I called Ranger and gave him the camper descriptions. I disconnected, and Morelli watched me clip the phone onto my jeans. I now had 2 cell phones and the panic button clamped onto my waistband.
New phone?
He asked. Goes directly to the Bat Cave. Morelli reached across me for the bottle of wine.
Maybe just 1 glass.
Grandma jumped when the doorbell rang.
That's my band, she said, running for the door.
My father had a plate of Italian cookies in front of him and a cup of coffee.
Band?
You don't want to know, I told him. Eat your cookies. Enjoy your coffee. Sally and his crew trooped in carrying instruments and amps.
Man, this is so cool that we can rehearse here, Sally said. We've been kicked out of every place else.
Lula was the last in. She was carrying a bunch of bags, and she was wearing a blonde wig.
"Wait until you see what I got," she said. "It's the bomb. This is the best outfit yet, and it hasn't got any feathers."
Sally started setting up in the living room, plugging the amps in, unpacking the guitar. The other three guys were working, hauling in a drum set, keyboard, bass.
"What the heck?" my father said. "What's going on?"
"I thought Sally was coming over for dessert," my mother said. "Who are these people?"
"The band," my grandmother said. "Nobody listens to me." "Of course no one listens to you, you old bat," my father said. "I'd have to blow my brains out if I listened to you. How am I going to watch television? There's a ball game tonight. The Yankees are playing. Get these people out of my living room. Someone call the police."
We all looked at Morelli.
"Do something," my father said to Morelli.
Morelli slid his arm across the back of my chair and whispered into my ear,
"Help."
"Wait a minute," my grandmother yelled. "I live here, too, and this here's an important moment in my life, and you know how old I am. I might not have many more moments left."
Clearly, that statement represented the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow for my father.
"We gotta go upstairs and get dressed," Lula said to Grandma, "and I got a wig for you, too."
"Maybe you should go to the lodge," I said to my father. "I thought Thursday was pinochle night."
"It's always pinochle night at the lodge. I wanted to see the ball game tonight."
"Don't they have a television at the lodge?"
"Yeah, they got one in the bar."
He looked at his coffee and cookies.
"I'm not done eating."
"A bag," I said to my mother. "For God's sake, put his cookies in a bag."
"I have to get changed," Sally said, going upstairs. "I'll only be a minute."
"Hurry," I shouted to my mother. "What's holding up that bag?" The bass player started tuning, adjusting the volume on the amp. The first sound that came out was whanging.
"Holy crap," my father said. "What in the bejesus was that?"
"Bass," Morelli said, eyeing a cookie on my father's plate.
"I see you looking at my cookies," my father said to Morelli. "Don't even think about it. Go get your own cookies."
I poured myself another glass of wine.
"Okay," Lula shouted from the top of the stairs. "Don't anybody look. Everybody close their eyes until we get into position." "I'm not closing my eyes," my father said. "The Italian stallion here will eat my cookies."
The drummer beat out a couple heart-thumping bars. The bass and keyboard came on at a deafening level, and the dining room chandelier jiggled and swayed on its chain. Plates danced across the dining room table. A half-eaten cookie fell out of my father's mouth, and Bob tipped his head back and howled. My mother ran in from the kitchen with the bag, but it was too late. Lula and Grandma and Sally were on stage in front of us. Grandma and Lula were wearing black leather hot pants and ice cream cone bras. Grandma looked like a soup chicken dressed up like Madonna. She was all slack skin and knobby knees and slightly bowed legs. Her blonde wig was slightly askew, and her ice cream cone bra hung low, not from the weight of her breasts, but from breast location. Gravity hadn't been kind to Grandma. Lula's body spilled out of her outfit. The hot pants were reduced to black leather camel toes in front and what looked like a leather thong in the rear. And the ice cream cone bra precariously perched at the end of Lula's basketball breasts. They were in big platform heels, and they had spiked leather dog collars around their necks. Sally was in a dog collar, black leather thong with a silver zipper inexplicably running the length of his package, and over-the-knee swashbuckling black leather high-heeled boots with huge platform soles. My mother made the sign of the cross and staggered into a dining room chair. Morelli had his teeth sunk hard into his bottom lip to keep from laughing out loud. My father's face was stroke red, and Bob ran upstairs. Lula and Grandma went into their dance routine, and Morelli broke out in a sweat from the effort of maintaining composure. Grandma wobbled into an amp, snagged her heel on the cord, and fell over into the drum set, taking the bass player down with her. She was on her back under cymbals and the bass player with only her platform shoes showing. She looked like the Wicked Witch of the East when Dorothy's house fell on her. We all jumped up and rushed to help Grandma, except for my father, who stayed like stone in his seat, his face still red. We got Grandma up on her feet and fixed her wig and adjusted her breasts.
"I'm okay," Grandma said. "I just caught my heel on the wire and unplugged the thingy."
Grandma bent to plug the amp back in and farted in the black leather hot pants.
"Oops," Grandma said. "Someone step on a duck?"
She farted again.
"Broccoli in the salad," she said. "Boy, I feel a lot better now."
I looked over at Morelli and saw that he had a cookie in his hand.
Is that my father's cookie? You're in big trouble.
He's beyond noticing, Morelli said. I've seen that look on people passing by horrific car crashes. Trust me, he's lost count of the cookies.
Maybe you should turn the amp down a little, I said to Sally. I think I heard glasses breaking in the kitchen.
My mother had her fingers curled tight into the front of my t-shirt.
You have to stop her, she said. I'm begging you.
Me? Why me?
She'll listen to you.
If this works out, I think I'll try to get a gig with the Stones, Grandma said. I'd fit right in with them. They could use a chick in the band. I wouldn't mind going on one of them tours, and I can do that walk like Jagger. Look at me walk.
We all watched Grandma strut around like Jagger.
She's surprisingly good, Morelli said.
My mother's eyes cut to the kitchen door, and I knew she was thinking about the booze in the cabinet by the sink.
What do you think of this outfit? Lula asked me. Do you think it's too small? They didn't have my size.
It looks painful, I told her.
Yeah, I think I'm starting to get a hemorrhoid.
Maybe tomorrow we can go out together and look for new costumes, I said. It would be fun to go shopping together.
That's a deal, Lula said. We could have lunch and everything.
You name it, my mother said to me. What do you want? Pineapple upside down cake? Chocolate cream pie? I'll make any dessert you want if you can guarantee me that your grandmother won't wear that leather outfit.
Chapter 20. A low cloud cover had rolled in, obscuring moon and stars. Morelli and I walked Bob in the dark, down sidewalks I knew inch by inch from my childhood. I'd roller skated on them, drawn chalk pictures on them, biked on them, walked to school on them, spied on boys and skinned my knees on these sidewalks. I knew the people who lived here. I knew their dogs, their secrets, their tragedies, failures, successes, and bad times. It was just a little past 9, and dogs were being let out for the last tinkle of the night. Televisions flickered through front windows. Air conditioners hummed. Morelli and I were holding hands, following after Bob, who happily plodded around blocks, sniffing bushes. I'd filled Morelli in on the phone call and my midnight appointment with Scrog. Now Morelli and I were walking Bob, and I was feeling a little like a heart patient waiting to undergo surgery. Nervous, looking forward to the end, hoping it ends well, anxious to get started. I looked up from the sidewalk and realized we'd walked for an hour and come full circle. We were in front of my parents' house, still holding hands, still silent.
Now what? Morelli said.
I'm going back to the apartment. Scrog wants me dressed like a bounty hunter, and Ella went shopping for clothes for me.
Anything I can do to help you?
It's Ranger's daughter. I think this is his show, and he has his whole organization behind him. And probably the FBI is involved. Ranger seems to be communicating with them at some level.
We're all communicating with them, Morelli said.
Just do your cop thing, whatever it is you're supposed to do, and then do your boyfriend thing and make sure there's cold beer in your refrigerator. When this is all over, I'm going to need a few.
When this is over and I get you back into my house, you're not going to have time for beer. I'm going to get you naked and make sure all the scary, bad thoughts are pushed out of your mind. Be careful tonight. Put the panic button someplace where it can't easily be found. I'll be around if you need me.
I don't believe I'm in this outfit, I said to Ranger. I feel like an idiot. Ranger slid a black nylon web gun belt through the loops on his jeans.
You're dressed like a real honest-to-gosh bounty hunter, babe.
I was wearing black biker boots, black leather pants that fit like skin, and a black leather vest that had a layer of Kevlar sewn into it. The pants were cut low, and a swath of skin showed between pants and vest. Ella was optimistic about my weight, I said. A size up would have been better.
Not from where I'm standing, Ranger said, buckling his gun onto the belt. But you might want to remember to sit with your back to the wall.
I felt the back of the pants.
Yikes!
I needed another inch of leather. This is embarrassing, I said. Ranger clipped his cell phone with earbud on one side of my pants.
Once you start driving, you're going to have a lot more in your mind than these pants. Let's hope this works and everyone comes out healthy.
He clipped my cell phone with earbud to the other side.
My phone is voice activated, and you can leave it on at all times. Where's the panic button?
Hidden?
I'm afraid to ask.
Good, because I don't want to say it out loud.
If this wasn't so deadly serious and we had more time, I'd find out for myself. Go out ahead of me. Everyone's in place. I'll leave through the side door.
I took the stairs, crossed the lot, and angled into the Mini. I had a route planned out. I was going to keep it simple and drive up and down Hamilton until I got the call. Once I was in the car and out of the lot, I settled down. I had Ranger in my ear. He wasn't saying anything, but I knew he was there. Not a lot of cars on Hamilton. That made it difficult to follow and stay hidden. Ranger could do it because he had multiple cars on the job. Scrog would find it much more challenging. I drove for 15 minutes and was making my second pass on the bonds office when my phone rang and adrenaline shot into my system.
I like the outfit, Scrog said. Much better. Now as soon as you lose the people following you, we can be together. Don't worry about them. I have it figured out. Just keep following my instructions. The first thing you have to do is go to the municipal building parking lot at the corner of Main and 15th Street. You're to go to the middle of the lot and wait.
And the line went dead. I'm going to the municipal building lot at the corner of Main and 15th, I told Ranger.
That lot will be empty at this time of night with the exception of a few maintenance workers. Take your time getting there. I'm sending someone to check it out.
10 minutes later, I was approaching the lot, and Ranger came back on the phone.
There's a lone car sitting in the middle of the lot, a blue Honda Civic. We didn't want to get close to it, but it looks okay from a distance. No one in it. Probably he wants you to swap out cars.
I drove into the lot and stopped a short distance from the car Ranger had described. My phone rang.
Good, Scrog said. Now get out of your car and stand with your hands in the air and turn around.
Why?
Just do it.
I took Ranger's earbud out of my ear, tucked it into my pants, and got out of the Mini and stood with my hands in the air.
What have you got clipped onto your pants? Scrog wanted to know.
I was in the middle of an acre of blacktop, washed in the eerie glow from overhead security lights. And somewhere beyond the light, Scrog sat watching me. He could see the two phones, so he was using a scope. Probably binoculars, but it could as easily be a rifle scope. That's my phone, I told him.
There are two of them.
I have a backup.
I want you to take both phones and leave them on the ground. Then I want you to get into the Honda. The keys are in the ignition, and there are instructions on the passenger seat. Follow the instructions.
I unclipped the two phones and set them on the blacktop. I got into the Honda, cranked the car over, and read the instructions. Scrog wanted me to go to the parking garage 3 blocks down on Main. I was to park the car on the second level, take the stairs to the street, and walk east on Dennis Street toward the center of the city. When I got to the condo building at 375 Dennis, I was to enter through the front door and go to the elevator. Okay, I no longer had a phone, but I had my little tracker gizmo, and probably 40 people were following me. And the FBI probably had a helicopter flying around with infrared equipment keeping watch on my every move. I stuck my head out the window and looked up at the sky. No helicopter. Cheap-ass FBI. I followed the instructions and parked on the second level of the garage. I got out of the Honda, and my heartbeat picked up. It was late and dark, and the garage was deserted. I was lucky if I didn't get mugged before I made contact with Scrog. I took the stairs to street level and went east on Dennis. I walked a block and a half and found myself in front of the condo building. I stood there for a couple minutes trying to give Ranger time to get into position, trying to get my feet to move forward. My feet didn't want to go into the building. For that matter, none of my other parts wanted to go into the building either. It was 5 stories of mid-range housing, probably constructed in the 50s and renovated a couple years ago when it switched from apartments to condos. I was able to look through the double glass doors to the small foyer. Dimly lit, unattended, elevator to the right, a bank of mailboxes to the left. No Scrog. It was in the 70s, but I'd started to sweat at my hairline. A little girl's life is at stake, I told myself. You can do this. It's important. Be brave. And if you can't be brave, fake it. I took a deep breath and entered the foyer. Very quiet. No one there. I saw a piece of paper taped to the wall by the elevator. Ride the elevator to the garage. Damn, I didn't want to go to the garage. Garages were creepy at night. Anything could happen in a garage. I cracked my knuckles, got into the elevator, and pushed the button. I felt the elevator move, and I got another shot of adrenaline. I had so much adrenaline going through me, I felt like my hair was on fire and I could hear a pin drop a mile away. The doors open. I stepped out. And a woman moved into view from behind a van. She walked toward me, and I realized it was Scrog. No wonder it was so hard to spot him. He constantly stole new cars, and he went out in drag. I watched him come closer, and I thought he made a pretty decent woman. If I was looking at him in a car, I wouldn't guess he was a guy. It was the walk that gave him away.
Surprised? He asked.
I nodded, and felt oddly relieved. Men in dresses don't inspire terror.
It's all about packaging, Scrog said. Now it's time to change yours. You're gonna have to get undressed.
No way!
There's no one here, just you and me.
He had a tote bag over his shoulder and a gun in his hand. He tossed the tote at me.
I have new clothes for you.
What about dressing like a bounty hunter?
This is in case something goes wrong and someone sees you. Everyone will be looking for the bounty hunter in black leather. And not that I don't trust you, but I have to make sure you're not wearing a wire. So take your clothes off. All of them.
You're gonna have to shoot me to get these clothes off, because the only way they're coming off is if I'm dead. Scrog thought about it.
You have to at least let me patch you down. Turn around and put your hands on this car.
Just don't get too friendly, I said, turning around. Scrog moved behind me.
You're gonna have to get over this modesty. We're together now.
There was a familiar sizzle, and it was lights out. It took me a while to get smart, but I finally put it together. I was in the trunk of a car. Been there, done that. It was pitch black. I had no idea of time. The car was moving, turning corners. My hands were handcuffed behind my back. I was pretty sure I'd been stun-gunned again. I hoped I wasn't naked. I felt around with my hands and was relieved to feel clothes. Unfortunately, they weren't the clothes I remembered wearing. Scrog had undressed me while I was unconscious. How icky is that? The car stopped. The engine cut out. A car door slammed shut. And then the trunk opened, and I saw Scrog again, still in drag in the brown wig.
Feeling better? He asked.
No, I'm not feeling better. I'm feeling pissed off that you keep stun-gunning me.
That's the reward for bad behavior. You have to learn to obey me.
He hauled me out of the trunk, and I saw that we were in a wooded area. I could hear cars in the distance, but I couldn't see lights. The road was dirt. A motorhome was parked in front of us. It wasn't one of the motorhomes reported stolen. It was old and partially rusted out around the rear wheels.
Home, sweet home, Scrog said.
Where are we?
We're home. That's all you need to know. Get in.
I was wearing a white t-shirt and lightweight gray sweatpants. Where are my clothes?
In the tote bag, except for the little gadget you had cleverly hidden in your pants area. I thought it best to leave that behind.
I felt myself go cold, and my heart stopped dead in my chest for a moment. I was so cold I was chattering inside, and I thought, this is fear. Debilitating, gut-clenching, cold fear. Ranger had no way to find me. I climbed rickety steps and wrenched the door open. It was dark inside. No electricity. I towed my way into the sweltering hot room and stopped when I ran into something that felt like a table.
Don't move, Scrog said. I have a battery-powered light.
Stay calm, I told myself. At least this rat trap doesn't smell like death. Just keep thinking. Don't panic. He switched on what looked like a small electric lantern. The light was dim, and I thought this was a good thing. Best not to look too closely at the motorhome. It seemed to be composed of two rooms. I was in the living room, dining room, kitchen area. Upholstery was filthy and torn. The floor had been patched with odd pieces of linoleum. Water stains ran down the walls. The Formica tabletop and kitchen countertop were riddled with cigarette burns and knife scars. A lumpy, soiled pillow and threadbare blanket had been left on the bench seat behind the table.
I figure once we get the business up and running, we can get something nice. But for now, this will have to do, Scrog said.
There was a closed door at the end of the kitchen area. It had to lead to a small bedroom and maybe bathroom of sorts. I was hoping Julie was okay behind the door. Where's Julie? I asked him. I'm anxious to see her.
She's in the bedroom. You can go on in. The door isn't locked.
I called ahead. Julie, it's Stephanie. I'm coming in. No one answered, so I pushed the door open and peered inside. too dark to see anything. "Do you have another lantern?" I asked Scrog.
"No," he said. "You can have this one. I have eyes like a cat. I don't need light."
He moved past me into the room and set the lantern on a small bedside built-in. Julie was huddled on the bed. Her brown hair was snarled, and her eyes were huge. Her face was filthy, and there were days-old tear tracks on her cheeks. I'd read a description of her when she was kidnapped, and it looked to me like she was wearing the same clothes. Maybe that was a good thing. At least he hadn't undressed her. Her feet were bare, and she was chained to the bed with an ankle shackle. She looked at me, and then she looked at Scrog. She didn't say anything.
"It's late," Scrog said. "You girls must be tired. You need to go to sleep. Tomorrow will be a big day. Special things doing tomorrow."
He reached under the bed and pulled out another length of chain with a shackle attached.
"I'll just clamp this onto your ankle," he said to me, "and then I can unlock the handcuffs."
He reached for my ankle, and I kicked him in the head as hard as I could. I booted him back about 3 feet. He landed on his ass, and I went after him, catching him in the side with another kick. He managed to scoot away from me. He reached behind him, his hand moved toward me, and I got another jolt from the stun gun. Chapter 21. When I came around, I was on my back on the grungy floor in the bedroom. My shoes and socks had been removed, and the ankle shackle was locked in place. I waited for the noise to go away in my head and for everything to stop tingling before I tried to stand. Julie was sitting up in bed, watching me.
"Good one," she said.
That knocked me over. Good one. Julie Martine had grit. Maybe more than me at this point. I did a head roll and shrugged off the muscle cramps that come with taking a bunch of volts and crashing to the floor. "It was lame," I told her. "Your father would have finished him off."
"Do you mean Ranger? I don't know him real well."
"He's very special." Julie lowered her voice.
"He's gonna kill him. That's what he meant by tomorrow being a big day. Chuck says he can't be whole until Ranger is dead."
"Who's Chuck?"
"That man. He wants me to call him Dad, but I won't do it. I call him Chuck. I don't think he even cares about you and me so much. I think it's Ranger he really wants."
I wasn't completely surprised. It had crossed my mind that eventually Scrog would feel the need to eliminate Ranger.
"Chuck's crazy, isn't he?"
Julie asked.
"He told me he's killed people, like he was bragging about it. Has he really killed people?"
"I think he might have."
"That's so horrible," Julie said.
"Has he treated you okay?"
"Yeah. I mean, I'm chained in here like an animal, but he hasn't, you know, done anything to me. And my chain can reach to the bathroom."
The sound of snoring carried from the other room. Murder and kidnapping obviously didn't weigh on Scrog's conscience. No tossing and turning trying to sleep. No late-night pacing. So now what? Now you suck it up and look for a way out, I told myself. You do what Ranger told you to do. Focus on the goal. Push unproductive emotion away. I got down on my hands and knees and looked to see how the chains were fastened. "The bed is bolted to the floor, and the chains are padlocked around the steel frame," I told Julie.
"I know. I looked. I couldn't find a way to get free."
I took the lantern and prowled the bedroom, looking for something that might be helpful, not finding anything. "Tomorrow, I'll look again when there's daylight," I said to Julie.
"There's no daylight," she said. "He's blacked out all the windows. Half the time, I don't know if it's night or day."
"Rise and shine, ladies," Scrog said, throwing a couple bags onto the bed. "Breakfast is here."
I looked in one of the bags. Twinkies, ring-dings, hostess pies, tiny bags of salted nuts, little boxes of raisins, candy bars. More of the same in the second bag.
"He robs convenience stores," Julie said, selecting
a box of raisins.
"It's an easy hit if you get there when they're opening up," Scrog said. "Problem is, they never have a lot of money. I need more money."
"Where's the coffee?" I asked him.
"There's no coffee."
"I can't get through the morning without coffee," I told him. "Do you have any idea how nuts I'm going to be without caffeine? I need coffee in the morning." Julie made a big pretense of opening a package of peanuts, but I could see she was enjoying my show.
"Geez, don't go all PMS on me," Scrog said. "How was I supposed to know?"
I narrowed my eyes at him. "Are you going to get me coffee?"
No, I haven't got the time. I'm in the middle of something here. Boy, you think you're doing something nice for people and all you get is yelled at. I didn't have to rob that store, you know. I did it for you and the kid.
He went back to the living area, leaving the bedroom door open. I heard him raise a shade, and some light filtered into the bedroom.
What are you doing out there? I asked him.
I'm building a bomb.
Julie and I looked at each other, mouths open wide.
What kind of a bomb? I asked Scrog.
What do you mean? It's a bomb, for Christ's sake. I got it off the internet.
You have a computer here?
No, I went to the library. They have computers you can use.
So, what are you going to do with the bomb?
Shut up! I can't concentrate with you yammering. I'm almost done. I just have to connect a couple things. Eat a goddamn donut or something.
I already ate a donut and now I'm thirsty.
There's water in the bathroom. And anyway, we're going out and you can get something to drink then.
Where are we going?
We're going to get money. I need more money.
Scrog came into the bedroom carrying a packet that was about 4 inches by 4 inches and maybe an inch thick and entirely wrapped in duct tape.
I'm going to toss this onto the bed real gentle, along with the tape, and you're going to strap it onto yourself, he said.
Is that the bomb?
Yeah, it's supposed to be pretty stable, he said. It's not supposed to go off unless I push the button.
Not supposed to?
Hey, cut me some slack. This is my first bomb.
I'm not strapping a bomb to myself, I said.
Well, great. Then how about I shoot the kid in the foot?
You wouldn't do that. You wouldn't shoot your kid.
I would if I had to. I'd shoot her in the foot so she wouldn't die, and maybe she'd walk with a limp, but she'd get over it. It's in everyone's best interest. I need more money, and I don't trust you to go out with me yet.
Why do you need all this money? I asked him.
I got a plan. I figure now that we're together, we'll escape to Australia. No one will find us there, and we can all be bounty hunters. All we have to do is lay low for a while, and everybody will forget about us. Like, while we're laying low, we can drive to California. Then we get on a plane, and next thing, we're in Australia.
Yeah, that's a good plan, I said. What about passports?
Passports?
You can't move between countries without a passport.
Are you sure? Even Australia?
Duh, Julie whispered.
Shit, I didn't think about passports. Okay, we'll just change the plans a little. We'll go to Mexico. Hell, we could go to Mexico in a little boat. Just sneak in after dark. Or we could probably just walk across in Texas. It'd be cheaper, too. I wouldn't have to risk robbing a bank. I could keep robbing these little stores. I've already got a couple hundred saved up.
I know how we can get some money, I told him. There's a high-risk bond that I just got a line on. If we could capture him, my BEA fee would be around $5,000. But there's a catch. If I get the money for you, you have to let us go. Not for a single minute did I think Scrog would let us go. What I thought was that he used me to get the money and in the process feed his ego and fulfill his bounty hunter fantasy. I figured if he had his way, he'd come back to this piece-of-shit motorhome, lure Ranger here, and then kill us all. I was just hoping to buy some time and get us out in the open where we might be seen. Ranger was in tracking mode, sniffing the bushes like Bob on a rampage. And if I was lucky enough to make the capture, I'd have a chance to pass information on. I'd have to walk my FTA into the police station.
Who is this guy? Scrog wanted to know.
Lonnie Johnson, wanted for armed robbery. He didn't show for his court appearance. Lula and I went after him, but he disappeared from the face of the earth. Then yesterday, he popped back into the area. I have a new address for him.
And he'd be worth $5,000?
Yep.
Maybe I should just ransom you for the money.
Ransoming takes time, all that back and forth negotiating, and then the FBI gets involved, and you have to give directions for making the money drop. Anyway, I thought you wanted to be a bounty hunter.
Is this address a sure thing?
I don't know, we couldn't do a phone verification. He tried to get a line of credit, and he gave an address.
Tell me how this is going to get us some money again.
We make the capture, I turn him over to the police, Connie gives me the money I've earned.
I'm a little fuzzy on the part where we turn him over to the police. You don't think I'm going to let you walk into the police station, do you?
That's usually the way it works.
Boy, you must think I'm stupid. You'll go in there and blab everything.
Okay, I have another idea. Lonnie Johnson shot a guy who was servicing an automatic teller, and Johnson walked away with $32,000 in change. I'm betting he still got most of it.
Suppose we rob Lonnie Johnson.
You mean we, like, take him down and force him to tell us where the money is?
Yeah. I knew in my heart that Lonnie Johnson pissed away every cent he stole. The fact that he was trying to get a loan to buy a car would seem to support my theory. No point bothering Scrog with this line of reasoning.
Okay, I guess I don't see any harm in trying, Scrog said. You're gonna have to strap the bomb on, though, and I swear, if you do anything stupid, I'll blow you to bits.
I got the bomb strapped on, and I looked over at him. Unlock the ankle bracelet. If we go out now, we might catch him at home. Scrog stepped back. He had the little detonator in one hand, and he threw the key onto the bed with the other. I unlocked the shackle and skated the key back to him across the linoleum floor.
Now you have to get dressed in your bounty hunter clothes, he said. If I'm gonna do this, I'm gonna do it right. We need to look like a couple badasses.
Sure, I said, but you have to get dressed up too.
Don't worry about me. I'll be dressed.
I went into the little bathroom and wriggled into the black leather pants. I took the t-shirt off and put the vest on and stepped out. What about the bomb? I said. You can see I have a bomb strapped to my stomach. Julie was on the bed behind me.
That's not all you can see,
she said, giggling. Scrog had changed into black leather pants and a black t-shirt and was wearing a black leather Sam Brown belt armed with cuffs and stun gun and Glock. It was better than the lady's dress, but he sure as hell was no Ranger. Ranger would crack a smile at the thought of someone impersonating him in leather pants.
Put the t-shirt on over the vest, Scrog said. It's the best we can do right now.
I dropped the t-shirt over my head and walked ahead of Scrog out of the motorhome. I stood blinking in the bright sunlight, waiting for my eyes to adjust, trying not to get hysterical over the fact that I had a bomb strapped to my stomach.
Jeez, Scrog said. Now that you're out in the sun, you look like the bride of Frankenstein. Can't you do something with your hair?
Maybe if you'd stop running electricity through me, my hair would look better. Ever think of that? And what do you think? Hair just happens? I need a roller brush. I need gel and hairspray and a hairdryer. Next time you rob something, make it a hair salon.
Cripes, just trying to be helpful. I figured you cared about your appearance.
If I cared about my appearance, I wouldn't be wearing these butt-crack pants, I snapped back at him.
Yeah, they're kind of small, he said. Maybe you should lay off the donuts.
I thought this was a good chance to get hysterical and try to rattle Scrog.
You have a lot of nerve, I said, all emotional. All you brought me to eat for breakfast was cake and candy. If I'm so fat, why didn't you bring me some fruit? You didn't even bring me coffee. All I wanted was coffee. Was that so much to ask?
And to my surprise, I'd actually popped out a couple tears and gotten my nose to run a little.
I'm sorry, Scrog said. Hold it down, will ya? I'll get you some coffee. I swear to God, this isn't turning out like I thought.
Scrog opened the trunk on the car.
Get in and we'll go get coffee.
I'm not getting into the trunk. I've got a bomb strapped to me,
I said, hiccuping back sobs that were only half fake.
What if I roll around? And anyway, it's demeaning. How would you feel if I made you ride in the trunk?
I couldn't believe I was actually saying this. Demeaning. How was I thinking of this crap?
It's so you can't see where we are. It's for your own good.
I wiped my nose with the back of my hand.
It's not for my own good if I blow myself up.
Oh, man. You have to stop crying. You got mascara running all down your face.
It's all your fault. You started it. You said I was fat.
I didn't say you were fat. You're putting words in my mouth. Hell, get in the car. I'm starting to think it would be a relief to go to jail.
This is a nice car, I said, buckling myself in. Is it new?
Yeah, I picked it up this morning when I went out for breakfast.
You should steal a Lexus next time. I hear they're really comfy.
I'll keep that in mind. We're coming out of the woods now, so I want you to close your eyes and put your head down so you can't see.
Oh, for crying out loud.
Just do it. I'm ready to blow you up just to shut you up.
I thought I'd pushed him about as far as I could, so I bent in my seat and put my head between my knees. The car swerved off the dirt road and skidded to a stop in a patch of grass.
What the heck was that? I yelled.
Shoot, I'm sorry, Scrog said, but you haven't got much leather back there when you bend over like that.
I pulled the t-shirt down.
If you were a gentleman, you wouldn't look.
Wasn't my fault. I was just about blinded by all that white ass.
I felt my eyes bug out of my head.
Excuse me? All that white ass?
That didn't come out good, Scrog said. I didn't mean it exactly that way. You're not going to start crying again, are you?
Just drive. Just get the heck back on the road.
Actually, after looking at your, backside, I wouldn't mind taking some time here to get better acquainted, if you know what I mean.
Let me get this straight. You have me wired to explode, and now you want to get friendly?
Well, yeah.
I am so sorry to tell you that as long as I am a walking bomb, I am not engaging in friendly activities. If you want to get friendly, you're going to have to take this bomb off me.
I can't do that. Last time I wasn't careful with you, you kicked me in the head.
I wasn't sure what to say to that. First chance I got, I was going to shoot him in the head, but I didn't want to spook him. I folded my arms across my chest and tried to look petulant. I'd never looked petulant before, but it seemed like it fit the role I was playing.
Is that no? He asked.
I did an exaggerated pout. I've said my last word on the subject. Scrog blew out a sigh and backed the car out of the grass and onto the dirt road.
Where are we going?
Stark Street. Chapter 22. We were on East State Street driving toward the center of the city, and we were looking for a Dunkin' Donuts drive-thru.
We passed a bunch of shit, Scrog said. I don't see why it's gotta be Dunkin' Donuts.
They make the best coffee, everybody knows that.
They just put a lot of cream in it, Scrog said. All it does is clog your arteries up. And I don't ever remember seeing a Dunkin' Donuts here anyway.
Maybe if you go to Greenwood.
I hate to keep thinking ill of you, but I'm starting to wonder if you're making us drive around so someone sees us.
That's silly. You drive around all the time and you're never spotted.
Yeah, but I'm mostly dressed up like a woman when I'm driving around. I have 3 different wigs, too.
Well, I'm sure there's a drive-thru on Greenwood.
Okay, but that's the last street we're gonna try. After Greenwood, we gotta go after Lonnie Johnson.
This is it, I said to Scrog. It's the building on the right with the door missing and the boarded-up windows on the ground floor.
It looks deserted.
Lots of these buildings look like this. Some are even condemned, but people still live in them. If you look at the windows on the 2nd and 3rd floors, you can see signs that the units are being used. A sheet tacked up for privacy. A couple empty beer bottles on the windowsill. Friday morning was a quiet time on Stark Street. Everyone was sleeping something off. Drink, drugs, desperation. In another hour, the bars would open and the hookers would start to stake out corners. Traffic would pick up and security cages would get rolled back on local groceries, adult videos, pawn shops, hash shops, and liquor stores. And little by little, the bedraggled, angry, lost souls of Stark Street would roll out of their sweat-soaked beds and make their way to cement stoops and street-side folding chairs and discarded sofas to enjoy the first smoke of this steamy summer day. There was a new black Cadillac Escalade with temporary plates parked in the alley next to Johnson's building, so there was a slim chance Johnson was inside. I had no idea how this would play out. I was with a man who floated in and out of varying degrees of insanity. He wanted to take over Ranger's life, but there was a corner of his brain that always knew it was a sham. He didn't mind shooting people, but I doubted he was much of a match for Lonnie Johnson. Scrog was nuts. Lonnie Johnson was bad. My real concern was that Johnson would unload a clip into Scrog, and Scrog would fall on the detonator, and I'd be dust. I suspected Scrog hadn't any idea what to do next, but I didn't think he'd want me running the show, so I sat back and let him wing it. He circled the block and parked in front of Johnson's building. He sat there for a minute, and I swear I could see him calling up his Ranger personality.
"Let's do it," he finally said.
And I had to look closely, because the change was striking. He wasn't Ranger, but he wasn't Edward Scrog either.
"Do you know which unit this guy's in?"
"No," I said. "He just gave the address." We got out of the car and entered the building. It was dark and musty. No bulb in the overhead foyer light. The stairwell smelled like urine and fast food burgers, paint peeling off the wall, a dead roach feet up on the 3rd step.
"You go first," Scrog said. "I want to keep an eye on you. Sniff this guy out."
It wasn't a big building. 3 floors, 2 units on each floor. No one in the 2 ground floor apartments. The doors were missing. It looked like they were using 1B to dump garbage.
a stained mattress and a bunch of fast food wrappers on the floor in 1A. A rat as big as a beaver rustled through the wrappers. I hurried up the stairs. Doors were closed to 2A and 2B. I listened at the doors. Spanish coming out of 2A. I didn't have Lonnie Johnson pegged as bilingual. Nothing in 2B. I knocked, and no one answered. I was losing patience. I put my boot to the door, and the door crashed open. I was totally impressed with myself. I'd never kicked a door open before.
"Nice," Scroggs said. "Now go in and look around."
Someone was living there, but it was hard to tell who it was. Junkyard furniture, mattresses on the floor, empty beer bottles filling the sink. Didn't feel like Lonnie Johnson. I went to floor 3 and did the same routine, listening at doors. A woman answered my knock on 3A. She was hollow-eyed and rail-thin. I looked beyond her to a man on a mattress. He was equally wasted. No Lonnie there. She didn't know who was across the hall. No one answered 3B, so I crashed that door open, too. The apartment was empty, but neat. This felt more like Johnson. A pair of men's sneakers had been placed on the floor beside a small stack of clothes.
"If I had $32,000, I wouldn't be living in this dump," Scroggs said.
"I'm not the only one after him. Someone shot up his house and then burned it down. That was when he disappeared. Something brought him back, but this is probably just a short visit before he moves on." We went back down the stairs and out of the building. A man was walking our way, carrying a brown grocery bag. I looked him in the eye, and I knew. "Lonnie Johnson?" I asked.
"Yeah?"
"We'd like to talk to you if you wouldn't mind stepping inside." Johnson was big, late 30s and about 250 pounds. Lots of those pounds were fried dough and beer, but there was some muscle, too. His eyes were small and close-set and radiated mean.
"Fuck off," Johnson said.
I took 2 steps back and left Scroggs standing face-to-face with Godzilla.
"We have a business proposition," Scroggs said.
"What kind of proposition? You look like that stupid bounty hunter on television."
Scroggs glanced over at me and smiled as if to say, "See, now we look like bounty hunters."
"We need to go upstairs to talk about it," Scroggs said. "I don't want to talk about it here on the street."
I heard the staccato tap of heels on the sidewalk behind me. I turned and saw Joyce Barnhart striding toward us.
"What the hell's going on?" she wanted to know. "This guy belongs to me. I was here first. I've had this building under surveillance since yesterday. You think I'm sitting in this shithole neighborhood for my health? Back off."
"I need to talk to him," Scroggs said.
Joyce planted her hands on her hips and got into Scroggs' face.
"And you would be who?"
"None of your business. You can have him when I'm done."
"Yeah, right," Joyce said. "That makes me feel all warm and fucking fuzzy. Like I'm gonna hand this guy over to Ms. Plumberbutt and Minnie Ranger. I don't think so. Go find your own meal ticket."
And she gave Scroggs a hard shot to the chest, knocking him on his ass. Scroggs and Barnhart both pulled guns. Scroggs squeezed off 2 rounds. The first went wide of Joyce and blew out a tire on Scroggs' stolen car. The second stovepiped and jammed the gun. Joyce's first shot caught Scroggs in the foot, ripping off a chunk of boot. Scroggs yelped and rolled, and Lonnie Johnson bolted, shoving into Joyce, sending her gun flying out of her hand, skittering halfway down the block. Meanwhile, I was furiously working at the tape that was holding the bomb to me. It was heavy-duty electrician's tape, and it was wrapped around and around my torso. Scroggs had the detonator stuffed into his utility belt. I kept one eye on Scroggs' hand to make sure it wasn't going for the detonator, and I clawed at the tape. Scroggs had momentarily forgotten about me, more focused on Joyce and Lonnie Johnson. I had a length of the tape ripped free, 1 piece to go. Scroggs looked over at me and went for his stun gun and not the detonator. I gave a frantic yank on the tape, and the bomb broke loose and went sailing into the street. Lonnie Johnson peeled out of the alley in his Escalade. He whipped the wheel around, put his foot to the floor, and laid down a quarter inch of rubber before he took off down Stark. His back tire ran over the bomb, and there was a fireball explosion. The Escalade jumped up a couple feet and came down on its side, the undercarriage smoking. I was now face to face with Scroggs. He had the stun gun. I had a lot of rage.
"Bring it on," I said to him. "Come get me."
Scroggs cut his eyes to the car. Flat tire, and the Escalade was blocking his exit.
The only way he was going to get me to go with him was to stun me and drag me. And if that wasn't bad enough, his foot was bleeding where he'd been shot. He turned to leave, and I grabbed him by the back of his shirt and took him down to the sidewalk, cracking his head on the cement. I punched him in the face, and then the son of a bitch did it again. I was struggling to get to my feet, my brain still fried, and I realized the hands helping me stand belonged to Morelli. After a moment, his face came into focus. His eyes were red-rimmed and shadowed from fatigue. His shirt was soaked in sweat.
"Jeez," I said. "You look like crap."
"This is nothing. You should see Ranger. We worked through the night looking for you."
"I got zapped again."
"I heard. I was a couple blocks away following a lead when the call came in on the explosion and shooting. Joyce called it in. She wanted to make sure she got credit for her capture. She had Johnson cuffed to his steering wheel when we got here."
"How is he?"
"Let's just say it wasn't necessary to cuff him. And if he ever gets out of jail, he'll remember to wear a seatbelt."
"You have to get to Julie before Scrog. I know where she is. He's got her in a rusted-out motorhome at the end of a dirt road. The road goes off Ledger. It looks like nothing is down there. You go past an abandoned house with a tar-paper roof, and then it's the next left."
Morelli called it in.
"He can't have that much of a head start," I said. "Joyce shot him in the foot, and he didn't have a car. He had to steal one."
"He got a car right away. He flagged a guy down and yanked him from behind the wheel and drove off. We got a description of the car, and it's already gone out. The driver didn't say anything about Scrog's foot. He said Scrog was bleeding from the nose."
"I punched him."
"And would you know how the Escalade happened to explode?"
"I had a bomb strapped to me, and when Scrog and Joyce were arguing, I managed to work the bomb loose, and when it ripped free, it flew into the street, and Johnson accidentally ran over it."
"You had a bomb strapped to you," Morelli said, sounding a little dazed.
"Scrog made it. It was only supposed to go off when he pushed the detonator, but obviously getting run over by an SUV could do it, too."
"You had a bomb strapped to you," Morelli repeated.
"Yeah, it was really scary at first, but terror is a strange thing. It's such a strong emotion it can't sustain itself. After a while, a numbness sets in and the terror starts to feel normal. And that's a good thing, because it allows you to function." Morelli hugged me against him.
"I need a new girlfriend. I need someone who doesn't wear bombs."
"You're squeezing me too tight," I said. "I can't breathe."
"I can't let go."
"Look at me. I'm okay."
"I'm not. I don't know what I thought, but I'm not sure I ever got to the numb and functioning stage. I've been at the terror level ever since you dropped off the radar screen."
He blew out a sigh.
"And where the hell did you get these pants? Half your ass is hanging out."
We slowed when we reached the entrance to the dirt road and maneuvered around the cop cars that had been first on the scene. We'd already heard the motorhome was deserted, but I wanted to see with my own eyes. A uniform was ringing the area with crime scene tape. One of the first cars in was a black Rangeman SUV. No reason for Ranger to remain hidden. Everyone knew about Scrog. Morelli and I ducked under the tape and went to the motorhome. The door was open. There were blood splotches on the steps leading in. I went inside and raised the shades and pulled taped cardboard off windows. The shackles were still chained to the bed, but Julie was gone. Scrog had cleared out in a hurry. He'd left the wigs and the few pieces of clothing he possessed behind. It looked to me like he grabbed Julie and took off. Even at that, I was surprised he hadn't run into the police. Ranger was standing hands on hips waiting for me when I came out of the motorhome. Morelli was right. Ranger didn't look good. Our eyes met, and a very, very small